Welcome to the Sons of Mjolnir podcast.
The Sons of... what?
This isn't your Sons of Macaroni, yeah!
The Sons of Mjolnir?
This is Sons of Mjolnir, yeah!
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Sons of Mjolnir. As always, I am your host, Fat Thor, and I am joined today by a very, very special guest. You may know him as having some of the best breakdowns in the game, one of the biggest nerd channels here on YouTube, and probably spoiled your favorite show or movie for you. I am joined by Paul from Heavy Spoilers. Paul, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing good, mate. I'm very good. I can't actually pronounce Mjolnir, so I might have a bit of trouble with that. Every time I try to do it, people are like, you can't pronounce it right. And I'm like, I'll just say Jonathan in the end.
Yep,
and that's just a bit of a niche reference, people say.
Say, go with the Paul Rudd Jonathan every time. But yeah, we get a lot of people that have that problem. That's why our intro is like kind of a play on people having a hard time pronouncing the word Mjolnir. Because, like I said, that's a very common thing, which, I mean, I probably should have thought of when I chose this name.
Spelling it as well. Spelling it's difficult.
Dude, that J will sneak up on you real fast. Yeah. Enough about us and our channel. We got to talk about you and your channel, because that's why we're here today, okay, my friend. And I am such a big fan of your guys' stuff. I've been watching your videos for so long. It's honestly weird. Like, have you ever watched a video of like the people who do like the Simpsons voices or something? And then you're like, wow, how does that voice come out of that person? Like, that's kind of how I feel right now, because I've watched so many of your videos and now I'm sitting across from you. So it's super exciting for me to have you on. And before we get started with the channel, and I want to talk about some Invincible stuff too, we typically kind of do, you know, your kind of comic book origin, if you would, for our guests that we have on here. And I know that you are a super huge Batman fan, and that you actually started your career as doing reviews on Batman graphic novels. You say that you have almost every Batman graphic novel, and the channel even started.
Here. What? Name a novel and I'll pull it up.
I know your library is very extensive, which we're going to get into. But I got to ask, what was like your first experience with Batman and just comics in general? And like, where did this love really start?
Oh, it was, I used to watch the Batman movies back in the day. My parents, I remember they recorded the VHS of, on a VHS, they recorded the original 89 film. Mm-hmm. But it was really cut up because they were like censoring it for me being a kid. I think I was like 3 or 4. So there would be massive bits where they'd record it. And then as soon as anything violent happened, they just stopped recording it because they were capturing it from the TV. It was basically stream recording, kids. You guys might not remember, but back in the day, you could put a tape in and you would just screen record what was on the screen, you see, and it would burn it to a tape. So there'd be massive chunks missing. But I just love the costume design. I mean, even now my kids are massively into Batman. I don't know if it's because Batman's a very easy word for kids to say, but they're just like, Batman, Batman. So they love that. Really, it was just the same for me. And I remember I got given Batman Annual, I think it was 1992, which was like a little comic book about Two-Face and stuff. And it just kind of went from there, really. And then, you know, I kind of had a time where I fell out of love with comics. Well, didn't fall out of love with comics, but, you know, when you go to high school, it's kind of like it wasn't cool for people to be reading comics. So I just didn't really pay attention to them that much. And then it was when Hush released that I kind of got back on board with it. And I remember I never picked up issue 1 for some reason, but I started from Hush issue 2, went to Forbidden Planet, got that, took it home, read it, and I was just blown away by it. And in the issue, Batman's just kind of knocked out for the entire thing. And it's basically just criminals standing around him trying to like take his mask off and stuff, and he's got all these contingency plans, and Huntress is trying to get to him before they discover who he is. So it's not really, it doesn't really make Batman look that good, but I just from the artwork by Jim Lee, the story by Jeff Loeb, I kind of just swept me up in it, and yeah, that was kind of when I had my second life of comics, I would call it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it. And I think Jim Lee got a lot of people either into comics or back into comics, especially with all of his X stuff and his Batman stuff. But I mean, Batman is like, I feel like that's a universal one for every, like, every, like you said, even your kids, like there's something innate about like the design, the story of someone without powers, like taking it on themselves to do the right thing. I think
the kids don't even know that Bruce Wayne is Batman. They just think Batman is, and when my wife goes out for like walks and stuff, just to get like half an hour away where she can clear her head, I'll sneak the kids in front of the TV and I'll put on Batman, the animated series. And I'll be explaining to them. I'll be going, look, Bruce Wayne is Batman. Do you understand? And they're just like, nah.
Their first Batman? Spoiler.
And I'm like, that is Batman. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I say the work never stops, right? The work never stops.
Yeah.
So I got to ask too, with your huge fan of Batman, are you still currently, like, are you picking up some current Batman runs? Are you currently reading any of his stuff? Like, I know, no. Jason Aaron's got a, like, Outer World Batman going on right now.
The odd story I'll pick up, I mean, this is probably going to give you an idea of how sort of, I wouldn't say checked out, but I'm not, like, massively into it at the moment. So Tom King was probably the last stuff I picked up. And when Scott Snyder was doing the Dark Metal stuff, the Dark Knight Metal. So I'm just looking at my comics here to make sure to see like when the last time I bought a Batman one was. Obviously, I picked up Batman 89, the Dark Knight Returns 3. I don't think I read the Dark Knight Returns 4 if Frank Miller did it. I remember there being rumors of it, but that's kind of when it was. So it's probably sort of start of the pandemic that I've read up to. But I'm more kind of, they're releasing a lot of omnibuses at the moment, especially Marvel. So they're obviously older things. So when I'm picking stuff up, it's kind of those comics. And then I'm going back and reading perhaps stuff that I read as a kid and haven't read for years and years, or stuff that there wasn't a massive collection of and I might have read 6 issues of. And this is like, here's all 50 issues of this entire story. So yeah, omnibus collecting at the moment's been just a massive thing for me, really.
Yeah, I was going to say, judging by your shelves that I see you post, you're definitely more of a trade person than like the Weekend Warrior type. But I'm sure that you're aware, though, of like how many Batman titles are currently going on. And, you know, this has been something going on for years. So I'm curious, do you have a sort of, I mean, I know obviously as a fan, you're probably, you know, give me more Batman doesn't really matter. But do you have any opinion about like DC's dependence on Batman, especially when it comes to like their comic titles?
I think there was a point when Rebirth first started that they were like, we're doing 4 Batman books a month. And that was kind of when I was like, just can't keep up with this. Just can't keep up with it. You give me one a month, I'll be there every month. But now I'm just not reading any because there's too much. Obviously, I read the main title with Tom King. But yeah, I read the Scott Snyder stuff as well, like the First Ally. You know, they were Doomsday Clocks, but not really Batman, but, you know, it's kind of tied in with him. And yeah, I think there was a bit too much. I do think they are kind of relying on him, but he is popular. So
yeah,
you can understand why they do it. You know, people go to me like when I do certain videos and I keep basically touching on that topic. They're like, are you just milking this? I'm like, well, this is keeping the channel afloat right now, and it means we'll be able to do videos in 6 months because we're making all these ones now.
Yeah, it's keeping the ship afloat. That's why, you know, Batman for DC is Squid Games for heavy spoilers, right?
Yeah.
But like I said, I just find that, at least for me, because I'm very similar to you, like growing up, Batman was my guy. Like that's where I started collecting comics, was Batman trades, all that kind of stuff. But for me, even though like literally my job is to talk about comic books, I haven't read Batman in so long just because there's just so much out there. Even for a longtime fan like myself, it's kind of intimidating. Like, I'm like, where do I start? You know, where do I jump back in? So I can totally see where like more casual fans would be immediately kind of turned off by that.
Well, even me being a hardcore fan, it's kind of off-putting. And I do find that they're kind of remaking a lot of the older stories that I've read. Obviously, they're trying to get new readers on board and get them up to speed with what's going on. But I find like a lot of the stories are kind of remakes of other stories that were classics. I mean, Tower of Babel was a massive thing where Batman had contingency plans on everyone. And they've kind of done that story so many times now, it's almost like it was amazing at the time because you're like, oh crap, he's got this, but now it's just kind of that's what you expect. And yeah, the ones that Tom King was doing, a lot of those kind of pulled motifs from older comics, the Bane one especially, that was kind of a lot, that was sort of a reverse of Nightfall, and it was really well done, but I didn't necessarily find there was as much creativity in terms of new ideas being brought forward. And it's kind of like Batman sort of very, he's basically a status quo character, I would say, where they've kind of kept him ever since Neil Adams' run in the 70s. He's kind of stayed along that sort of trajectory. I mean, obviously Alan Moore and Frank Miller made him a lot darker, but he's sort of always kind of stayed along that level. Whereas before that, there was like the Golden Age, the Silver Age. And he's kind of stayed the same almost. And when they're retelling older stories in a new way, but using the same elements, I don't find it as interesting, even though I love the character. It's kind of like, you know, your 20th Sherlock Holmes book, where it's something that's pulling from lots of different elements. It's not as, you know, I'm not as excited to read it as, say, I would be something like, I don't know, Marvel, I'm reading a lot of recently. Yeah, even just the Spider-Verse stuff, I picked that up and kind of went through it. And that was like a nice way to take the character to the point where it's kind of like, now you almost can't imagine Spider-Man without a multiverse thing included in it, even though for years and years, it was never really part of the character. Thor, that was another one by Jason Aaron, that they just released a big omnibus on that, where, you know, Jane Foster's playing a big role in it. And it's kind of, I find those ideas more exciting. And I'd say the last time I was, I mean, obviously Scott Snyder's run, I was massively excited for. The Dark Knight Metal thing was brilliant. White Knight actually is brilliant as well.
Yeah, White Knight's great.
I'm going to disregard my previous statement. Yeah, White Knight is doing interesting things, I think. That's very, very good. But yeah, the last time, I mean, it was probably Grant Morrison's run when they introduced Damian really had Batman have to take on the role of a father. That was like, oh, okay, they're going somewhere really different with this that I haven't really seen before.
Yeah, and I'm not even a huge fan of Damian, if we're being completely honest, but I 100% agree. There's like things you need to kind of keep the character going, keep him fresh. And that was the perfect way to do that, which I got to say too about the Damian thing. I haven't done like my extensive Damian homework. So people in the comments, please don't. I'm not hating on my boy. I'm just saying he's not my favorite. We're talking all this Batman stuff. I got to ask, what's your favorite either Batman run or, you know, storyline? I know we just mentioned a bunch of great ones, but if you had to pick, like, this is the one.
I mean, the Long Halloween, I remember picking that up and just reading that from cover to cover in one sitting, and I just couldn't put it down. And The Godfather is one of my favorite films ever. You know, just the way it takes influence from that. Like, the first opening line of The Godfather is, I believe in America, when the guy's asking Don Corleone to start killing people. And the first line of The Long Halloween is, I believe in Harvey Dent. And there's lots of things that are clearly pulling from it. So that really just captures my imagination. When I did a read through for my website, though, I thought that was going to be number one. And then The Cult, I'd read that before, but then the Cult was just one that really kind of grabbed me. And I think that's probably my favorite run. Grant Morrison's as well. That's just spectacular. And the fact that, you know, the DCU's going in that direction with it, or at least from what James Gunn seems to be posting online, I think that's going to be big. Yeah, I think that's going to be great.
Yeah, I can't wait for the new whole, you know, James Gunn DCU. I think all that stuff is going to be absolutely fantastic. But getting back to you and your channel and all that, now that we talked about Batman, I want to get into your channel a little bit and heavy spoilers. Like I said, I'm a huge fan of the channel. Your guys' breakdowns are easily the best out there. The ending explained, all that stuff. Easily, like, there's no contest.
No way.
But something I want to talk about that I found super interesting and something I've seen you talk about is this idea of persistence. We talked about, you're a big Batman fan, you went to college for music production, and then after that you found yourself working in a call center and just wasn't really feeling it. and you decided to start doing YouTube, and you also started, like we were talking about, doing the Batman reviews on your friend's website. Let's see, One Day Retro.
You've got
One
all
Day
your
Retro.
Research, man. That's
hey, I
awesome.
Try. But so
taking trip down memory lane.
So again, I want to talk about this idea of persistence, and you talk about how persistence is key, and that when you started the channel, you had the Batman versus Superman kind of review sort of breakdown that kind of hit big, or I think it was about like 6,000, you said, and after so the it hits big, right? And then now you're at this level of over 1 million subscribers, like, you know, crazy views on videos. So could you just talk a little bit about that idea of persistence, not only when you were starting out, but now that you are at this level? Like, it's not like, you know, the channel hits big and then you're just sitting back and, you know, enjoying it, right? Like, there's still so much work to be done.
Yeah, I actually think it's more difficult to get views now than it was when I was first starting out, which is a weird thing to say, because obviously you've got inbuilt subscribers, but they have subscribed to you for a specific kind of content. And the way things work with us is that, you know, you can't keep talking about a movie every single week until the end of time. And there are things like the MCU, you know, they have lots of projects coming out. You've got to kind of cover lots of things if you're doing it full time and constantly having content coming out. Now, the people who subscribed, they might not necessarily have subscribed for that other thing that you're going to cover, and they might not be interested. And the way YouTube's algorithm works is it sends out the video to your subscribers, and then if none of them care, then it's just not going to push it to anyone anywhere. So it's a weird thing, and I do find that there's lots of channels that kind of just lean into the same topics over and over again, which is totally understandable, especially if you're running a business. We try and do, you know, certain things that our subscribers expect, and then I'll just to keep my own sanity, I'll do my own thing. But in terms of persistence, I mean, I think it's just key with anything, really. I think if there's anything in life you want, you know, as long as you go in with the mentality, I'm not going to get this overnight, that's a good place to start from. And I've just always thought I've got such bad imposter syndrome. I've always thought I was crap at stuff. And it's just kind of been a key. The driving thing for me has been, I need to put the work in to understand how this works. And I mean, there's nothing on the channel that I can't do, like, and that's purely because I've just went through every single thing. And, you know, I can edit now, I can do thumbnails and edit audio and whatever. We're even moving towards using cameras on screen right now, which this is like my new lighting setup that I've started testing out. And it's just all kind of persisting through that and trying to be the best version that you can be. You know, it's going to be difficult, it's going to take time. And it's just a case of not giving up, because you never know when. I've always viewed it as, you never know if you just put another week into it, if that would have been the point where you blew up. And I remember there was so many channels when I was coming up that was sort of around the same level as me. But I've always tried to be one of the first people out with a breakdown. And, you know, that's kind of a characteristic of the channel almost now. And there was so many people where we all had new channels, and I could tell they weren't going to the movies on a Thursday night and then coming home and making a video about it and staying up till 2 a.m. And, you know, they might have posted on the Friday, but that gave me a bit of an advantage. And then, you know, even though we started around the same level, maybe they take a weekend off, whereas I wouldn't. And if you keep doing that, you get to a certain point where you outwork that person almost. Mm-hmm. And they aren't necessarily seeing the benefits that you are, because you've put the hours in. And it's a case where anything that you want to do, you know, for example, like if you want to become you know, there's natural ability in sports and stuff, but say, you know, Michael Jordan, you'll always hear stories about how he was just David Beckham as well. I don't know if you saw that Netflix documentary recently. It was like just always kicking a football. And sure, there might have been people when he started out that were at that level, the same as him, but he was just putting the work in and making it an obsession almost to get good at it. And that's kind of what I've been doing. And you will find, you know, if you're listening to this for a motivational speech, you'll find when you start something off, you have a lot of competition and people that want to do it, but you just need to outlast them. And you, even if you build an audience, and what I found when I was first starting out is I built an audience alongside these people, and for whatever reason, I don't know if they just got burned out or whatever, but overnight, it almost felt like there was four channels that I was competing with who were all doing the same thing. And overnight, it felt like those four just stopped making videos. And I mean, we'd probably all been making videos side by side. And this was to get to 10,000 subscribers. But it felt like we'd all been making videos for about 2 years. And I think they might have just felt like, it's been 2 years, it's not going anywhere, I'm gonna leave it now. But those four channels dropping out left me with basically all of their audience. So overnight, I mean, my channel then from that point just blew up. Yeah, and it's just kind of outgrinding other people. And whenever I tell people, you know, some people are put off by it, they see it as like, oh, well, I feel like it shouldn't be that difficult. But the time's going to go anyway. You know what I mean? The time you're doing, you know, if it's like, it's going to take you 10 years to get to 1 million subscribers. And some people would be like, oh, I can't be bothered doing that. But those 10 years are going to happen anyway, mate. Mm-hmm. And you might, you know, I'm sitting now with a massive Funko Pop collection laughing about it.
Look at those 10 Funkos, years are, baby. That's success right there.
Exactly. Who else do you see with this much money to waste on Funko Pops? And that's kind of the thing. It's just more outpacing and outlasting people. And you know, you might say I'm the best breakdowner. I'm definitely not, but I am consistent, and I am driven, and I am, you know, hardworking, I'd like to think. And yeah, it's just kind of, it pays off after a while, and it is worth putting the work in, I will say to people. But you just have to, it's the grind at first that is the hardest thing. But you know, if you want to get good at Call of Duty or something, you got to grind it. Anything you want to do in this life, your starting point will be you'll suck. But as long as you keep going, eventually you'll learn. And it's just about being persistent.
I love that, dude. I love that motivational speaking out here on Heavy Spoilers episode. And I love too how you talk about, you know, imposter syndrome and stuff, because I mean, I deal with all of that kind of stuff on a very daily basis, even at the very small level that, you know, that we are at. So to hear that, you know, you dealt with those same things, I think that's something that everyone, especially people in the creative field, kind of deal with, but a lot of people don't really want to talk about. So again, I just relate to that. And I got to ask, speaking of all this stuff and speaking about, you know, outlasting people, and you're talking about, you know, some of your competitors early on, for whatever reason, got burnout or just, you know, stopped doing it. So again, kind of similar question, both for when you're starting out and now at the level that you are at, how do you find you're able to maintain that balance of it being work, but this is also something that you'd love? Like we were just talking about, you know, you're a huge comic nerd, you love movies and all this stuff. But I even experienced this even at our very small level. So I can only imagine at the level that you are at of, again, maintaining like, this is something I love, but you're also working. I see you talk about working 70 hour plus weeks. I saw you talk about leaving vacation to do the Loki breakdowns. Like, there's a lot of costs that come with doing all this sort of work.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of must come from a place of love, though. You know what I mean? I've worked so many crappy jobs, and just to be able to do this, I feel so lucky. People will often be like, get a real job. That'll be an insult people will throw at me, like, get a real job. And I'm like, well, if this is, I'd rather be doing this than working a real job. You know what I mean? So it must come from a place of love. Even if it does get draining sometimes, you know, but that is kind of the cost with it. And I think every YouTuber kind of knows that deep down. And the ones who are successful, they'll have a very similar story where it's like, oh, you know, I work all the time, it's hard to detach from it. There are pros and cons to that. But I mean, if it's either this or working in an office where I also feel depressed and burned out all the time and it's not talking about something fun, I'd choose this any day of the week. So I do feel lucky. I'm grateful that I get to do it. And, you know, you do kind of hit those points where, but I think it's just, you know, mental fortitude and kind of working through it and trying to, you know, the thing, like I have suffered from anxiety really badly in the past and depression. But the thing I always kind of tell myself to reassure myself is that these mental states are temporary, but at the time they feel everlasting. Like if you're depressed, your mind kind of tricks itself into thinking that you've always been depressed, and it tricks itself into thinking that this depression is going to last forever and there's not really any other way out of it. But there is, because I'm fine now and I might get depressed tomorrow or something, and I need to just remind myself that, you know, yesterday you felt fine, tomorrow you'll probably feel great. You just need to kind of work through it. And I know before I was saying about persistence and stuff, you know, you kind of know your limits and if you should be taking breaks and that. But something just always pulled me back to it. Something just always pulled me back. And like, even now I'm trying to set up a pension and they're saying, what age do you want to retire at? And I'm like, I don't really want to retire, to be honest. I kind of want to just keep going. Yeah. I've probably toned down how many videos I'll put out and maybe do like one a week, but at the moment I just feel lucky to be doing it, really. And you know, it's a huge support for my family and stuff. And there is the pressure there with it, but yeah, I mean, the pros outweigh the cons to the point where I've had enough life experience to know there's nothing I'd rather be doing other than this, luckily. Yeah.
100%. I 100% agree. But do you ever find it hard? Because I experience this sometimes, like with comics, especially because I do a lot of comic book reviews. We obviously cover a lot of comics here on the show. And sometimes I find it hard to like switch it off. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah. Oh, 100%. When
I'm like, I just want to read for fun, but then I'm just like overanalyzing everything. Like, do you find that like, when you're watching movies and TV shows, it's hard to like just turn that off?
Yeah, I mean, even in the build up to Invincible, I was like, I'm going to do another read through of the three omnibuses. And yeah, I mean, I've literally, one of my editors today was asking, because we're doing a season three production, and one of my editors was asking me for like notes and when stuff popped up in issues. And I just sent them all my notes. And I realized that I'd went through pretty much every single issue till about issue 75, I think it was, and I'd wrote down the entire plot of every single issue. So if I ever needed to look it up, but I mean, read, that sounds okay, but when you sat there reading and you finish an issue and then you've got to pause and take time out and write about it and then go back to reading it. And the reason I stopped at like 75 is because I just thought this isn't going to show up in the season, like for another 5 years or whatever, and I'm just not enjoying it. So I just stopped taking notes and I just read the rest of it, and that was, I really need to force myself to do that.
Dude, we're like living the same life. I was just doing the exact same thing for Invincible. Luckily,
yeah,
I did that with the first compendium for like the first half of season two. So I just like kind of put that aside and focused on two and three when for this second half. But dude, you should see the tabs I have in my compendium. And it's like, that's another thing I think a lot of people don't realize is like, yeah, I'm reading, like, yeah, my job's reading comics, you know, that's, you know, fantastic. But like you're saying, a lot of people don't realize it's like a lot of it is reading a comic, spending 20 minutes taking notes on it. It takes a long, long time to do a lot of this stuff. And that's leads perfectly into something else I wanted to ask you. And you already kind of alluded to this a little bit when I said that you guys have the best breakdowns in the game. And you've said that there's a lot of better YouTubers out there than you, but there's not many as prepared as you. And we're talking about this stuff about, you know, maintaining your kind of balance and all this stuff. So I'm curious, when you're approaching a breakdown for, you know, whatever it may be, TV show, what is some of that preparation to ensure that you can get that video out? Because I mean, I was just looking this morning, you already have the Invincible out, and that dropped last night, like literally a couple hours ago at this point.
Well, we got early access to that though. That we got early access
true.
To.
True, but I saw X-Men is a better example, because I know you didn't get episode 4 of X-Men, did you?
No.
So like, okay, perfect example. Like you had that out literally day of episode. I mean, you watched it first time just like everybody else. So I'm just so fascinated with how you're able to do that. And again, I know a lot of that goes back to the persistence and stuff that we talked about, but what is some of that prep that goes into getting that ready?
I mean, the intros and outros are stuff you can always have ready. If you know there's certain talking points that might be happening, then, you know, make a couple of notes in advance for that. Get a couple of images ready for whatever's coming. I mean, we did get the descriptions of all the X-Men episodes. I'm sure that they're on IMDb somewhere. So I kind of had a rough idea. We've got the episode titles as well. So yesterday's, it was like Motendo and Life Death. Obviously, Life Death's a massive comic book storyline. So, boom, all the issue images and stuff like that was ready. Read that beforehand. Motendo, it was describing it as like Jubilee gets sucked into a video game on her birthday or something. That was the description of it. So, my head automatically went to like, oh, it's like Tron. Or it's, and then I started thinking, well, Jubilee's birthday, is there any comics that have had that as a plot device, and you can kind of look into that. And it's just kind of getting those things ready and making sure that you have them at hand. And then on the day, I'll start an hour before the editors and I'll get all the audio. Well, I'll not get all the audio done, but I'll get like 2 or 3 minutes that I can send to them, and they'll start editing, and then I'll start writing the other stuff and recording that. And by the time they've finished that bit, I'm setting them new bits, and then it's kind of just piecing that all together. Have you seen The Founder, the McDonald's movie?
No, I haven't. I know of it, though. I know what it is.
Yeah. So they basically go to a McDonald's in there, and they're the same question. It's like, how'd you get your burgers out so quick? Which is when they invented fast food. But they had a system in place where kind of everything was so quick because certain things were getting passed off to other people, and it was kind of all in place. So for us, it's more just the system and getting it kind of down to an almost industrial level of creating content where every single thing is sort of in place. And like another thing is I just do audio only breakdowns as well. So there's not necessarily the video side of it, having to edit that. And yeah, it's just kind of fine tuning that process, which has taken years. But every time I make a video, it's like, oh, what happened on that one that I could have maybe done a bit faster? And then again, persistence over years, you learn what your weaknesses are, you learn what you can get ready in advance. And yeah, it just kind of becomes like a system almost.
Yeah, well-oiled machine. And speaking of the team you got over there, I got to talk to you very quickly about one of my favorite people. You recently had MT join the channel like almost a year ago now, I want to say, a little bit ago now.
Yeah, it was August last year, I think.
Yeah, so yeah, almost a year. And I mean, again, I cannot say enough good things about MT. He is just such a great guy. His theories are literally, like I said, you got the best breakdowns in the game, and MT's got the best theories in the game. And
MT's theories are weird because it's like, you'll come out with them, and even I'll be like, I don't know, mate, I don't know. And then 5 years later, it'll get confirmed. I'll be like, son of a bitch.
Nerd Sodomus, man. It's real. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how the dude does it. I mean, it's insane. But I just got to ask, like I said, just being a huge fan of MT, I just got to ask, what's it been like adding him to the team and having him on these theories and all that stuff? Like we were talking about making the channel kind of a well-oiled machine.
Yeah, I wish we got to spend more time with him, to be honest. And that sadly is something just with the time difference. A lot of the time when we're finishing, he's starting. And I do, one of my big regrets is like not getting more time to kind of sit down with him and not necessarily train him, but kind of just spend more time and going over stuff, because we're both kind of isolated. Like I'll do my own projects, and unfortunately it's not as collaborative as I'd like it to be. It's kind of, we both get a video topic and then go work on those video topics separately. So yeah, I love talking to the guy and stuff. It's just, I wish there was, you know, the stuff synced up better. Which we are trying to work on. We are trying to do more videos with each other.
Yeah, I saw you just recently did one together. I forget which one it was.
Yeah, it was the X-Men 97 review.
Yeah, X-Men 97, yeah. So
because we got that early, we could plan out time and stuff and get that ready. But it's just when you kind of, I don't know, I'm getting to the end of my day and then he's starting his and something comes up. It's like, oh, crap, you know, we've got this thing that you're working on already. It becomes a bit disastrous. But we are... I've hired someone who's basically their job is to come up with an entire infrastructure to just make it so that we have more time to do stuff together.
Yeah.
But along with other stuff as well. But yeah, that's kind of what we'd like to do.
Yeah. I mean, I just love seeing him on the channel. I mean, obviously with you over the pond there in the UK, it's super hard. I mean, we rescheduled this like 5 times, I think, before.
Yeah.
So, you know, schedules is hard to line up and everything. So, you know, all that is tough, but you guys are making it work because it's very seamless. And as a fan, you know, I just love to see it. And so I got to ask too, before we get on to some Invincible talk, because we got to talk about some Invincible before we get out of here. But so I saw, I think it was Hawkeye, I want to say, one of the videos, I mean, you've talked about this plenty of times before, but one of the videos you were kind of touching a little bit on, you know, balancing being a fan and then also like not necessarily a critic, but like when you're breaking things down, right? And like specifically Marvel stuff, because like we're talking about, you know, you're very into comics and all that kind of stuff. So do you ever find it not hard, because you know your opinion is your opinion, but you know, especially in the age right now where, you know, hate equals clicks basically, and if you're hating on the MCU, you know, you're getting views. Do you ever find it hard to balance that being objective about something and just being a genuine fan? Like I'll put it to myself, like Thor Love and Thunder, right? Like I know that that's not a great movie. I'm not gonna say it's great, but I'm just a Thor fan, so like I enjoyed it because I love Thor, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think whatever you do, you're going to get someone complaining about it. So if you say something's good, you're going to get called a shill. If you say something's bad, you're going to get called a hater. And I was literally like, when What If and Echo dropped, I didn't give Echo a good review, but I gave What If a good review. Mm-hmm. And they both released within like 2 weeks of each other. And seeing like people, basically the up and down of people saying I was paid by Disney to give positive reviews and whatever, and then the week after it was like I'm racist bigot and hate women and hate Marvel and I'm a Marvel hater and I'm trying to destroy the MCU for clicks and stuff. It's weird. So I just try and I think when you overthink it, that's when it starts becoming an issue. So I just try and going with my honest opinion, and that's sort of what it boils down to, really. I don't really overthink it anymore, to be honest. Even like I know there's people who they'll not give bad reviews because they're scared of getting blocked from getting early access. But like, I'm living proof that you can say something's terrible and they'll still give you early access to it. So yeah, it's a weird one. I've never really consciously thought about it, really, to be honest. Like we've talked about getting called shills and haters before, me and Greg, but I've never consciously sat down and been like, this review must fit within a certain thing. I just kind of all view it as being a fan almost. And kind of that's how I interpret it. But I'll never be like, this opinion is the only opinion that anyone can have on this thing. If people like I love Invincible season 2, but there's people who are like, oh, we don't really like it, and I'm like, oh well, it's fine.
Yeah, you're not like, oh, and you're wrong.
yeah exactly. And I think that you will get people who they'll tell you you shouldn't have an opinion, and it's like, or you shouldn't, your opinion's wrong or whatever, but then it's kind of like, but why should I listen to your opinion of my opinion if you aren't going to even listen to my opinion?
Now we're just running around in circles here.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm sure after you're gonna be getting a lot of early access with Sony after that Madam Web review. I love that video. Another thing I wanted to ask you about very quickly is this kind of, which I mean, your channel is called Heavy Spoilers. You're in the business of spoilers, if you would. But I find that right now, even in the past like 3 years, like we are very much, the fandom has turned very much into a spoiler culture, like leak culture, you know, the set images. We recently had Ryan Reynolds even coming out, like being like, please, like, don't do this. So I'm curious, again, being in the business of spoilers, like you've built your channel on kind of, you know, quote unquote, spoiling things. How do you feel about this kind of leak culture that we're in? And like I said, specifically the constant, like I think Daredevil Born Again is a great example too. Like literally every single day we're getting some kind of, you know, someone snuck a picture on the set or this or that. So do you have any opinions on that?
I mean, it depends how it's delivered, I suppose. Is to I think there's two kinds of leaks. There's sort of I've heard this was a rumor, and this is kind of what's happening. And you know, it's not 100%, but it's kind of building hype to something that might be happening. And then there's the other kind of leak where it's like, this is it. Here's a photo or a video or a trailer, and this is what's happening in the film. And I think there's different levels to it. We've always, I mean, YouTube, it's so easy to block videos and get them taken down. And studios will do that relentlessly when it comes to this is it and here it is. So I've just naturally always gravitated towards doing the kind of rumory stuff. I mean, leaks don't really bother me. They don't ruin something for me if I see a leak most of the time. I mean, there'll be the odd occasion where, well, like finding out Han Solo died in The Force Awakens before seeing it, that was like I had to unfriend people over that. I was like, that's too far. That's ruined it. But yeah, I suppose how it's dressed up. I mean, Twitter, it's so difficult to avoid them now because people will just flat out post an image, and there's no way to kind of avoid that on your screen if you're flicking through it and you don't know how it's going to get recommended to you. I mean, there's backs and forths, and I know that the studios, you know, they do give you certain leeway, but then there's been times where it's got too much and they've been like going after people. Not necessarily going after people, but at least around, I mean, No Way Home leaked massively. That was
Oh, dude.
everywhere. But that was a Sony thing. But I know that behind the scenes with Disney, there was sort of, I mean, people weren't forced, but they'd said like, look, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness is coming out. We want people to enjoy it unspoiled. If you want to take that route and go spoiling stuff from it, we're not gonna take down your videos or go after you, but you know, don't come asking for screeners and stuff, mate, if you're gonna be spoiling things, and don't ask for tickets to premieres. So it was kind of that thing around the Multiverse of Madness. I feel like it has went back to that they're more kind of they're okay with it. But there are certain examples where I think it was the Quantumania script was leaked on Reddit on the Marvel Studios spoiler thing, and that got shut down. So I think there's a certain line, and I think everyone kind of knows where it is. And I think they know in terms of where fan expectations are, where that line is. They know where the studio expectations are. And you'll see the scoopers online who post stuff that's very cryptic. And I think cryptic posts can be okay. But when it's a flat out, it's like, this is it. And the movie's like 6 months away. I can see some leeway if it's like, oh, the episode's just released this morning and we're talking about it on social media. And it's kind of like, well, just stay off social media if you're that bothered about getting it ruined. And then wait. And like, we've all got access to Disney Plus at home and stuff. So just watch it before checking your phone and going on Twitter. So yeah, I mean, it depends. And the thing is, it's difficult for me to say what exactly it should be because there's so many different factors. And so there's people who won't even watch my channel because I could spoil something, which is fair enough. But I mean, they're gonna see spoilers as being like you shouldn't ever post. Like the other day I was reading a comment on an Inception video where it was like I can't believe you spoiled Inception. I haven't seen it yet. And it's like, well, mate, it came out 14 years ago. You know what I mean? We weren't rushing to see it.
You had plenty of time.
Yeah, so everyone's going to kind of have their own line of what a spoiler is. And some people be like, you should never spoil anything. It doesn't matter how old it is. You shouldn't spoil it. And there'll be other people who think it's fine. So it's difficult for me to say what's right and wrong with it. Personally, the way I've always gone, though, is just kind of as long as it's speculation, then it's probably okay. And I think it's okay in most people's eyes because a lot of people will still argue that. I mean, even that Spider-Man and Invincible thing, there was people who were out and out saying, look, he's not in the episode, mate. Don't build your hopes up. And there were people who were like, "He's it. Spider-Man's in the episode. It's Spider-Man." And the people who were saying, look, he's not in it. It's not in. They had people who hadn't seen the episode arguing with them and going, well, you're wrong because it could be this and it could be that. And they're doing like mental gymnastics to say why he is in the episode, even though they haven't seen it. And it's like, I don't know if I've got time to undo all those mental gymnastics to prove to you why he's not in the episode. It's just so it's not him, but they do something with it. So yeah, it's a bit weird. But I wouldn't really say, but hopefully that's been a good little discussion to think on of how studios react to it and fans react to it.
No, that was beautiful. That was a beautiful breakdown for us. And I mean, I just totally agree. I think that there's like levels to it. And, you know, a set photo, you know, something like that, that's in my mind, like, that's cool. Like you said, kind of building hype for the project.
The costume reveal's fine,
yeah, like that stuff's cool, like it gets me excited. But when you start getting into like specific like plot details, like, oh, this at like this scene happens this episode, like that kind of stuff, and like we're talking about like 6 months before it even comes out, like stuff like that, that's where I'm like, okay, this is getting, you know, going a little too far for me.
And the thing is, like, it doesn't feel good doing those kind of videos because I have done those kind of videos myself. And I know there's probably people who'd be like, hey, that son of a bitch, heavy spoilers. He's done exactly those kind of things. And I didn't find them good to make because there's a number of reasons why. The first is, you know, you have people in the comments saying you shouldn't be spoiling it. And then you've got people in the comments saying you're a liar and you're making it up. And then you've got people in you know, online who will just take what you've said and they'll report it as their own thing and you don't get the credit for it. And then you also have the creatives involved with it. I mean, I've spoke to people who worked on projects that I've spoiled before and they were like, oh yeah, we seen it. And it was kind of, it sucked. And like, they're like, we don't hate you or anything. Yeah. They're like, we don't hate you. Like we get you kind of trying to build hype and stuff like that thing Ryan Reynolds put out again. He understood that, you know, it builds hype and stuff, but to be one of those people that are like, you've spoiled it for a lot of people. It's like, oh yeah, don't really feel good about it. So it's not, and there's other ways you can do it as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, you kind of got to learn yourself and see how you feel about it before jumping into it. Because I know there's people out there who just won't care. They'll be like, I'll give you the full spoiler plot breakdown months and months in advance.
Well, and I got to say, to give you a little credit, you know, we were just talking about it, you know, no one is as prepared as you. So if you're doing that kind of stuff, I'm sure it was very well researched and, you know, very solid. But, you know, we have a lot of people out there, like you were saying, that will just take a very small rumor, like portray it as fact and all that kind of stuff. That's when it starts getting like a little, I don't feel good about this. But before we get out of here,
like every other day, there's like a different Marvel news updates Twitter account. And that just, you can tell they're just making shit up. But the rumors will be so tantalizing almost that people will just get hooked. And I mean, obviously we know the internet, you know, not everything's real on it, but there's a lot of people who will instantly read it and believe it because it's on the internet. And there'll be lots of people who share those things. And it's a, you know, these channels just build up so much of a following so quickly, and then they'll shut down 6 months later because everyone will realize like, oh, this person just posts shit all the time.
Yeah, there's a lot of those out there. But I'm thinking of one in particular, but I will not
Me
say
too.
It
We're probably
out loud.
thinking of the
I
same
say
one.
we're probably thinking about the same one. But before we get out of here, we got to talk really quickly about Invincible. So last episode, again, you already got the episode out there super quick. But last episode premiered last night, the end of Angstrom Levy, end of season two. I got to ask you, Paul, you've been covering the show just like me. What were your thoughts of season two as a whole and the whole, you know, I thought he was stronger. Being a comic fan, someone who read the comic, how was it seeing that moment on screen?
Yeah, I mean, it pretty much is ripped right out of the comics, really. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was just the whole theme of season two, with it being about Mark trying not to become his father, and just opening with the alternate Mark in another universe that's has joined his father and is a killer. And there's so many shots where he looks at his hands throughout the season, and then that final bit after he kills Angstrom, he looks at them and they're covered in blood, and him just going back and forth, I thought was a really good way to handle it. The final scene, you know, we talked about this privately. I'm not sure if they should have ended there. I felt like maybe an escape with Alan and Nolan, or an escape attempt, would have been good. But you know, that's how the season ends, and we've got three years or whatever, 2 years until the next one comes out. But I really enjoyed it. I'm hoping we get some specials in between now and then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were talking about off camera. We need some specials. We need some hour-long episodes. I mean, again, you read the comics, so you know what I'm talking about. There's so much to get to, and I just don't see how we're going to do that without putting in some, like I said, hour-long episodes, maybe some more specials like the Adam Eve.
Yeah, and knowing the comics, though, you still get loads of crap from it as well. Do you know Rexplode today? The Rexplode time traveling one. Mm-hmm. That is Rexplode, isn't it? It's not Rudolph going under the name Rex, because all my comments are saying that, and I'm like, no, I went back and checked the voice actor, and it was definitely, it's supposed to be Rex from an alternate timeline, but I'm getting flamed on. I'm getting flamed on people saying that it's Rudy, because Rudy takes Rex's name for a reason we won't spoil, but
yeah,
I'm getting flamed on.
I was honestly,
that ruins the show for me.
It's funny that you bring that up, because when I was doing my breakdown for that episode, I went through that same dilemma of like, well, is it, you know what I mean? But like you said, I landed on its alternate universe. It's the same voice actor. And I just love, I'm sure that you picked this up. I haven't watched the video yet. I'm so sorry, Paul. Don't hate me.
It's okay.
But I'm sure you talk about this in your video as well. But I just love in the, not only just this episode, but the season as a whole, that we're really spending more time with like these really heavy decisions that Mark is making, a lot more than in the comic. Like, we get that scene of him flying around, just like dealing with what he did. Because in the book, he, you know, we definitely get him like freaking out in the desert of like what he just did. But after that, he's kind of like just back to his normal kind of thing. So I really love how we get to kind of breathe on that for a second.
Yeah, I would. That's something I've always brought up in the reviews, is that you get more time and there's more character development. Whereas when you're reading it, like sometimes I'll just flick through it like so quick, skim the words almost, and because I'm desperate to get to the next plot point. Yeah. And yeah, they do give them way more character development. Like, Debbie's had so much extra character development compared to what she gets in the comics.
Debbie's my girl, man. I love Debbie in the show. Like, from the comics to the show, oh my, like, she's one of the best characters.
Definitely, yeah. They just give them so much more character development in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Eve has more, Rex has had more. I mean, Rex was always kind of a dickhead, but now you're like, even he's been like, you know, I realized I was an asshole and stuff like that. And
yeah. And another character that I think really applies to that I wanted to ask you about is Amber. And like, Amber from the comics and in the show is, completely different. And again, I haven't watched your video yet, so maybe you pointed this out, but I wanted to ask you again, since most people that I talk to about Invincible haven't read the comics, so this is like one of the first time I'm getting to nerd out with someone who knows the comics as well. But did you catch in this last episode the little nod to the comic with Amber when she's looking up at Mark? Did you catch that?
Yeah, it was Amber. I didn't mention it in the video, but I know exactly what it is, and
Yeah.
it's E. And the reason I didn't mention it was because we couldn't remember what episode, which issue it was from, and they were
32.
like, "It's going to take 10 minutes." Right? Okay. So yeah. So basically, Eve, and Mark are sitting about talking about how humans don't ever look up because they're not interested in what's going on. And the big thing that makes Mark feel like Amber is the girl for him is because Amber looks up and sees them, and he's like, "See, Amber did look up." So I'm guessing you're talking about that.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I thought that was such a great little addition. And like we're talking about the changes from comic to screen, I think Amber is a perfect, like, she is so different in the show in so many better ways than she was. Like, no diss to Amber in the comic, but they just done her so much better in the show. And I thought having her, like, I know she looks up eventually in the comic, like in that scene that you're describing with Adam Eve, but having her instinctually just like look up, I don't know, to me I just thought really kind of symbolized those changes from her comic book character. Like, she is in the show, she is the kind of person who does look up,
I don't know because my headphones cut out literally as you started
Oh
speaking there. So I've quickly
no.
changed headphones. So whatever
Oh
you said,
no. I
I agree or I don't.
agree.
Yeah.
Well, I was just saying, in the show, Amber instinctively looks up. But in the comics, like I said, they have this whole discussion. So I just thought that was really great little nod to the comic and a nod to how different Amber in the show is from her, which makes me think we can get a little, not spoilery, but theory. I feel like there's more. Amber's gonna have more to do in the show than she did in the comic book. Dude, what do you think about that? You think I'm off base there?
No, I agree. You've still got the arc with Gary coming up. I'd be interested to see how that happens in the show, to be honest, because they haven't introduced him yet.
That's what I'm
And I don't.
saying. It seems very different. Like they're playing what her role very differently. And she's like, it seems like a lot closer to Eve in the show than she was in the books.
Which was weird because it's like. Obviously, Mark and Eve, they just kind of get together in the books. It's not really like, oh, well, I'm friends with Amber. And even like marketing with, because Eve was dating William as well. And then they revealed he was gay later on. Whereas here, he's always been gay. But there was never like a conflict where it was like, well, you were dating my best friend and you're also best friends with my ex-girlfriend. And there was never conflict there in the comics. Whereas I feel like they will tackle that in the show. Cause, yeah, I remember Eve just showing up and she was like, "Hey, I heard you're single. So are we
Yeah, we're
dating?"
going on a date. Like that big Eve was very, she was ready to get on Mark for that for sure. But yeah, I
Which is
mean,
weird because they were friends.
yeah, which again is like I'm curious to see how they're gonna play it in the show because they're, I mean, where we're at in the show, in the comic, they're already dating. So, and like we haven't even really seen, I mean, definitely some looks, like we definitely feel some fireworks there, right? But we haven't really gotten anything like them like advertly like flirting with each other or anything. So I'm very curious of how that's gonna be going down.
Just I don't know.
I just hope that we don't have to wait, like you said, you joked 2 to 3 years till next season, because I really feel like, I mean, the content is as good as it's always been, but the break, I feel like, really kind of shot him in the foot a little bit, especially with more kind of casual fans that are tuning in because they enjoy it, but aren't like, obsessed with it like we are. So I really hope that they kind of learn a lesson from that with this next
Maybe it's
season.
a trick to get people to just buy the comics because they can't wait. It's like, oh, I'll just buy it because
Honestly.
they're not difficult reads either, and you'd be surprised how quickly you get through them.
Oh, dude, I devoured those compendiums in like 2 weeks. It was disgusting. Yeah,
It's literally like that's what it's been like for me. It's been like I'll read like maybe a third of a compendium a night and. It doesn't take that long at all.
And I gotta say too, in all honesty, I mean, I'm just a nerd. I love everything, but I mean, the Invincible comic is so damn good. Like, it's honestly hard to put down. Like, I was reading it for work purposes, like for breakdowns, reviews, and stuff. But I honestly found myself just like I couldn't stop, just because it was so damn good.
I think it's because it's a continuous story as well that it really works. Whereas, if you get like pick up a graphic novel that's 12 issues or something, or 6 issues, it's kind of like very self-contained, whereas yeah, you're literally seeing the guy's life from when he first gets powers and you're following him every single day. There's not really a gap, you know, there's some stuff, but it's very easy to just kind of follow this guy's day-to-day life, really. Yeah, so I think it's just the way it's structured, it works really well. Yeah, love it.
I can't echo you enough, man. I love the last season. This last episode was great. And it's been so great talking to you, my
Thank
friend.
you.
It's been so awesome having you here again. I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to come nerd out with me today. Thank you for all the great content over the years. Again, your channel has been a very huge inspiration to me. The
No,
stuff that I
appreciate that.
do, my written work, like I probably wouldn't be doing a lot of this stuff. So thank you for all the content over the years. And I mean, before we get out of here, I'm sure everyone that's watching and listening to this already knows, but in case they don't, tell them where they can find you. I know you just said we got the Invincible prediction video coming. Anything else that people can look forward to?
The Godfather is like the next thing I'm tackling. So if you like The Godfather and you want to hear me talk about that, that's coming up. That's
Beautiful.
it.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Check out Heavy Spoilers on YouTube. Follow Heavy Spoilers on Twitter, all the socials. Again, man, thank you so much for being here. Everyone watching
Oh,
and
thanks for
listening
having
to
me.
this. Of course, man, open door policy, man. You're welcome back
Nice.
anytime.
I appreciate it.
Everyone watching and listening to this, if you enjoyed this video, please consider giving us a like and subscribe. It really, really helps us out. Also, go over to bcwsupplies.com and use code Sons of Milnir for 10% off all your bags, boards, anything you need to collect. We have you covered. Again, that code is Sons of Milnir. Thank you all for watching. I hope you have a fantastic week. I hope you stay hydrated. I hope your stacks are fat, and we will see you all next time. Thank you.